All right, if everyone's ready, we'll get started with planning and operations. Good morning. No public comment. Okay, that's great. Thank you. So we'll start with old business. Regulations 10926, 27A, and 211. These are, have all been through the process. Now they are just ready for recommendation to move to the full board for adoption, correct?
Correct. So they've gone through the entire regulatory revision process, the public comment period, the public hearing, no comments received during any of that process, and we're not surprised by that because of how much we preload the system. So they are before you for, if you want to determine a recommendation, they're still going before the board tomorrow.
Sure.
It's just whether the committee wants to have a recommendation on where those should go.
Okay. So, and so as a reminder, 10926, just the types of ambulance services and staffing, that's what that dealt with. 10927A was more specific to ground staffing, and this is where the it's going to incorporate staffing for services in counties of less than 30,000 is added into that to allow for one EMS certified provider. And then 109211 standards for air ambulances. So any questions, comments from anyone? Committee members, good? Nope. Anyone online, comments, questions? Okay, take that as a no.
Clarifying question. So on the ground, so does that make a total of three individuals or two in the vehicle?
All right, Senator, this would be as still just two as the minimum.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. We do have a quorum, I suppose, but not that we necessarily need to vote to move this to the board because it's already on the board agenda for tomorrow. But I think this is just an opportunity that if any board members or anyone else had any comments or questions before that final vote tomorrow. But it appears that everyone is.
Here's what I found.
So does that include, so if a family member wants to ride along, is that still appropriate?
Yeah, it would. Yes, ma'am. It probably all be dependent on the service and their specific, you know, an ambulance service's specific guidelines or rules or regulations, whatever they have in place locally to allow for that to occur.
Ran into someone the other day here in Wichita, Sedgwick County, and the question came up. So thank you so much.
Okay. Any other discussion or comments on item A? Okay. Item number B. Reserve vehicles, backup vehicles, out of service vehicles. That discussion is ongoing. And did you have any? I know you guys had. There was a meeting yesterday that, unfortunately, I was unable to attend. But
there was so recommendations and comments that were submitted in. Let's see. We built basically a work group on that that has met a total of four times. I believe. So we started right immediately after the last plan and operations committee meeting and then met every 2 weeks to go through those regulations. There were 49 items brought in within that committee, along with then a couple that came from yesterday or after yesterday that were just kind of pushed out to the committee for that work group to look at to see if there were any comments or concerns or whether those could all be brought forward to you guys. So those comments were provided within the packet that you received earlier this week. And so we can step through those however you like.
That's it. Jerry, you have a question?
I do. I've got a question for Joe. At the last meeting, Jason White suggested we look at KMSA's data that they obtained. Have we received that? Their comments that they received on the survey they sent out?
Yeah, I have not received
the
results of that.
I was just curious because before I make a decision, I'd like to see those.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, we will provide those, the summary of those things.
Oh, okay, thank you.
So, yeah.
The work group is pretty well represented across as far as organizations that are on that committee. I think that it's a pretty well-rounded group of folks that are providing input, from my perspective anyway.
It did include invites went out to everybody that's the ad hoc membership
sure.
of the committee, and then as well as to you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. On that side of things. So it was good participation throughout.
Sure. As far as those that are on that work group, comments, questions on how things are going, how you feel the process is.
I think, we've made quite a few suggestions, and I will add that a lot of the KMSA things that came to survey were put into this.
It was just brought up, and I just happened to remember it. So
I think that this ad hoc committee or whatever put together, some of this was loaded into it. So I think we've made quite a few comments on this, and it'll be up to the board to see whether you want
sure.
to move forward on some of it or not. But I think we've got plenty of comments in here for you guys to decide whether you want to start drafting regs out of it. I suspect there'll probably be more once those regs are drafted out. It'll take a little bit of a
sure.
Process to get through, but yeah.
Did as far as committee members, have you guys had an opportunity to read through most of that information? Questions, comments?
I don't have any right now.
Okay.
I will say that as we went through this, this was any opportunity that came up for something we want to change in a reg, we were changing. We did not stick solely to inspection or service vehicles. So there's some things that weren't previously brought up. As you look, even like 1092-1, we went right after the 7-day addition or removal from the roster, looking for changes into that to make it get more practical.
Joe, anything from your perspective on the process?
I very much appreciated the process as it was going through and the idea there. I think Dave made a very good point. There are a lot of changes. The majority of changes that you see comments on don't necessarily pertain to the spare ambulance conversation, but are things that while it's open, it's probably, they always ask us to resist the urge to do those things and to try to hit that with a separate kind of cleanup side of it. But in this case, that doesn't make a lot of sense. It made more sense to fix everything while it was there
sure.
one time, especially given kind of some of the delays going on getting regulations up and through. So there were a couple discussion points, I think, that were wanted to be had with the committee to see where to go and whether there was a desire to do those things. But I think on that, I guess the overarching premise was allowing that flexibility, making sure that we hit the points that caused this to come before you to begin with.
Sure.
So the components that you haven't seen, but that went out to the committee last night, dealt with one of the items that we might not have covered was the fact of allowing a service to have both a primary ALS and BLS truck. So if they had a station that was predominantly staffed by BLS personnel, giving them the ability to have a separate medication equipment supply list for that condition, as opposed to it being tied and married to the truck. And so that was one component that we identified yesterday that we hadn't necessarily addressed, but that was put out again to the work group yesterday, late last night, or after hours last night anyways, for them to take a look at and see and offer any suggestions on tweaking on that side of it. But we can either go through on the discussion side of things, or if you'd like to just have us start the drafting side to incorporate the comments and go for those, we can head down that path as well. Kind of however you want to proceed from here.
As far as, I mean, looking through everything, I guess from my perspective, I think at least the regs that are in here that have been edited or highlighted and that are probably, I guess, I think are probably at the point of at least a draft to be able to be reviewed. You're referring to a draft without all the markups and everything in it, correct? So that would be my perspective, but it is something that's a little cleaner to look at. But
I think comments are nice, but they look dirty.
What's that?
The comments are nice, but they're hard to follow.
You did the best you could under the circumstances.
Sure. your comment earlier, the ALS versus BLS staffed vehicles or ambulances, that would be specific to, but just to make sure I'm clear, that if an agency had a truck that was predominantly staffed as a BLS truck all the time, that it would be reflective of that's all that would be inspected for is following that medical director authorization for protocols and the equipment and medication list that was approved by the service and the medical director for that truck?
Yes.
Okay.
That is a quick answer to that. So it would develop the ability, so making it permissive for a service to select that they have a primary ALS medication supply equipment list,
right, okay,
a primary BLS, and then one for a spare. So up to three lists that they could potentially have, and then apply those to the trucks however they deem they want to apply it to the truck. So, okay. But those conditions would be set so that trying to look at how this logistically gets applied, the inspector shows up, asks what the truck is designated today. They say primary ALS. They grab the primary ALS list and look and make sure those things are there.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I think a lot of that revolved around the clinical care versus operations, and so the flexibility that you're aware of on any day-to-day basis of how we manage the system.
Sure, absolutely.
Gives a little better.
I think from my perspective, one of the things that came out of this, one of the questions I had was, I understand the need for this. So we set up all of our trucks the same, whether it's ALS or BLS. Would this change make any difference if a BLS crew hopped in that truck because their primary truck was broke down, but it's registered as ALS? They would still be able to provide service out of that truck to their scope, right? Like, right. We wouldn't have to designate BLS trucks.
Okay. Nope.
Thank you.
And you wouldn't have to necessarily have, like in your case, if you're going to stock them all to that primary, you would have a primary list. This is all of our ambulances, period, end of story. Don't worry about the others as you go through. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, reference to the regulatory process. I know Joe gave us a kind of a rundown as a committee on the steps to get there, and timelines change all the time, but for the good of the group, I think one of the concerns is now we've identified all of these changes that need to be put forth, at least in a draft, and how do we bridge that gap between now and when they're actually put into place? And as was brought up the last committee meeting was, what do we do about the inspections that are forthcoming? So just looking for one timeline in that process and when we would expect, because it sounds like maybe up to a year, maybe.
As far as the regulatory process, sure.
And that's all inspections across the state. And with the 80% or so ballpark that were shown to have violations at the time, based on the grid that was produced, I would see that happening again, especially in the spare ambulances and the ability to invest in that much money to come up to regulation that's going to go away potentially is a tough, tough sell.
That is a good question, and probably one more for, not necessarily for the committee, which is a good question for the committee, but probably the full board as well, to figure out and to work with staff and figure out how do we get there? What do we do for the interim? I know the short answer is we follow what the regulation says right now, but.
Right. So the inspections would still take place based upon the regulation, the law that is in the books, because that's what we have to do.
Right.
Where the findings are come in, and basically their findings, the board's discretion exists when that comes before a committee to say, is there going to be any penalty for this, or are we going, because we're in the midst of trying to change this. And I'll tell you, set this size a year is actually faster than what it was done 10 years ago.
Sure.
I mean, this was a 5.5 year process then. It would be, and there's no guarantee that things end up ultimately passing at the end of that. So we'll still have to apply what's in black and white when we go out to do the inspection. The discretion comes again with the committee and saying whether or not there's going to be anything associated with that. So that's the current process. I'd say that's the process that would need to remain. I don't know that we can deviate from that.
Right. Which would be difficult to deviate from the regulation, from what the regulation states now, other than what you just stated. So
can you walk us through, I apologize, Mr. Chair.
No, go ahead.
So we're trying to reference back to investigations last month, and I didn't find minutes or recording on that. And so I was trying to ensure if we can walk through the process of how this would occur with an inspection. And violation is found, and that's, I need to be corrected on this. Violation is found, ultimately you're issued that draft. We understand then the service and ambulance sanctioning your reference point tool is then applied at that point. The fines are brought forth, and then it's moved forward as an order to the investigations committee for determination, or?
Yeah, no.
No, okay. No. Well, that's what we need the clarity.
Yeah, so, and that's all right, because I'll tell you, and it'll come up at the board tomorrow, we're looking pretty deeply into this process because of confusion that's out there right now to try to figure out how do we better communicate that moving forward. So my inspectors go out. They note their findings. The findings are then reported back to the service to say, here's what we found during this inspection. You as a service have a choice at that point. You either fix the findings or you don't fix the findings. I mean, that's what it comes down to. If you fix the findings, what we should have is some sort of documentation or something to support that the findings that were there were fixed, whether that's on site, whether that's later in time, whatever, they were taken care of. That information then goes before the investigations committee side of things, because there were findings, but the corrections that were made are local action that's taken. When the investigations committee looks at it, they look to see, okay, here are the potential violations that existed, here are the things that were done to fix that, what are our tools that are available to us to use? Currently, they've got limitation, modification, suspension, revocation of a permit available to them. They have the ability to issue fines and then they have the ability to accept local action, or they have the ability to say no violation happened. That's the gamut of what they have on their table. The sanctioning reference tool, that point tool, was there to make sure that there was a consistent means by which the committee was considering fines if fines were ever applicable. And so if they said this has gotten to the point where, I think an example that I've used before is this is the third time we're here with the same finding and you've done nothing to fix this, control this, does the committee want to ramp up and say maybe local action isn't appropriate in this case? Maybe a fine would get through at that point. When they make that determination, the tool was there so that there was a consistent approach to applying a fine. It wasn't that it was just carte blanche, here it is thrown out there, and this is what we're going to use going forward, and if it's found, there's no opportunity for anything to come back. Once the committee makes their decision on that, there's an order that's issued that says, here's what the findings of the committee were, here's what they have determined needs to occur or what could potentially occur. That's when the service gets the opportunity to say, hey, no, we still disagree with this going through, and that jumps into the CAPA procedure, so the Administrative Procedures Act, and going through. And then I won't give you an overview on CAPA because it's long and drawn out, but.
Well, and so I just want to clarify, I mean, because I'm sure others saw this in the same manner. That didn't occur at the last meeting. I had corrected the findings on mine, and I was presented with a theoretical fine of $800 for my agency. And then they issued orders saying that the fines had not been going to be assessed, but these were the violations. So that differs then from what was laid out here.
You were issued an order that set a fine?
What we understood at the end that there was not going to be a fine, that your orders were going to be issued about the violations.
Right. So yes, the potential violations existed at the time, which they did. I mean, if there was things that were corrected, and then yes, there was no penalty being associated with that. That's what that order would have said.
Okay. I didn't get the impression that local action was accepted at that time, that our corrections were being.
That would be the reason that there's no further action by the board.
The same thing I've heard from agencies around the metro, that things that could be corrected were still put into the system as violations for further consideration. So there's quite a bit of.
So they would still be noted as a potential violation if they were corrected. I mean, there's no reason to correct something that's fine, right? I mean, if it's not expired, if it's completely in working order, there's no reason to correct that, right?
Right.
Okay. I think we're saying the same thing. Probably just a different application.
What I was hearing was the same thing Dave sounds like he experienced, was that if there was something wrong and they could correct it, it was still noted as a violation for reporting, and so that was being held against them, even though they could correct it.
I think it's been that way for forever. Yeah. I mean, well, there has been multiple things over the years where, even with my agency, that they found something out of order or wrong. It was still noted that this was found wrong, but it was corrected at the time of the inspection. But both things were noted. It was still noted that it was
corrected on site,
but it was still a deficiency found.
Right.
Whether it's as minor as a fire extinguisher or unsecured or expired medication, but I don't know that that's ever been different or ever not been the process, to my knowledge anyway.
But it's certainly never been brought to investigations committee.
Right. I think it was brought, from what was brought to the investigations committee, I think overall was, here is everything that's occurring, just so the board had a clear understanding from the inspection process, because that has not always been the case, where inspections were always just handled in the office, unless it was something drastic to where action needed to be taken. This last go around, at least all that information that was presented was simply presented as here is a total list of all the findings that occurred over this inspection process, from as minor to as severe as what was found. just to give the board, not only the investigations committee, but the board as a whole, an idea of where things were at across the state. That was my understanding from the very beginning of that entire process. Not only as a board member, but also as a service director. I mean, I'm not the service director anymore. It's been given to somebody else. But.
Yeah. I think that second step is where the shock value came for everybody and understanding that that was going to be out there published, which I think accountability is a primary part of that. But as service directors, at least in my part, I didn't understand that process before it happened. So that shock value was brought back to me from my leadership and from those questions. And we talked about that at the last meeting about how that rolled out. So
refresh
and then
my
the
memory.
Clarity walking away from
Frank, refresh my memory. When that information came out at the last meeting, did it state in there that individual items had been corrected or not?
On what was received publicly?
Yeah.
No.
I think that's the key. I think transparency is a good thing, both for you and for us and for the public. But the confusion is that if I'm the public and I live in a community and I'm the Ralph Nader of the community, and that's not me anymore.
There's probably people that don't know who that is, Terry.
But... Yeah, but that could correct all that. I mean, if you found Frank's Butler County that had 15 different violations and if that's going to be a public document, it would really be helpful to say that these items were corrected locally, and you could even go as far as to say no further action is necessary at this time. Would that help? Dave?
No. What would help is it not going to investigations. I think your investigations committee has many issues that it needs to address other than minor service inspection violations. It hasn't gone to that extent in the past. I think if there's repeat issues, then yeah, that's a good place for it. That's my opinion.
So my question to you specifically would be, what needs to come to investigations through the inspection process?
Sounds like repeat or gross negligence or things along those lines.
No, I'm talking specifically about inspection. If they come out and find that, you know, something's not working three times in a row, and it's been a long time since I've dealt with the inspectors, of course, but if you come out and you find that you have a piece of equipment, a suction, for example, that's not working at all, do they have an opportunity to fix that at the time because it's a battery problem, or how's that work?
I think potentially that's it, but also, I mean, were there backups on the truck? I think that there's many things you can go down the road to figure the specifics on it. It's just the concern where it's going to end up. And you know, at the end, we don't have minutes. I don't have the recordings from that meeting. Unfortunately, but many of us heard at the end that orders were going to be issued by the attorney to these, and that sounds like overkill for violations is my point on it. I understand, and I want to be compliant with my inspections, mm-hmm. and want to fix things that are wrong, but you know, I don't know how many orders ended up being issued. I don't know that I've got one. I've heard some agencies have, but we left with the understanding that's what was going to occur.
Yeah. And Terry, back to your point, I think in addition to that, things that appeared in those inspection documents, such as this spare ambulance, which is what brought us to the topic we're on right now,
sure.
had not been applied the same way in the past. And I think the shock value of, wow, I've got to scramble. Any leadership chain would say, I'm going to correct it right now. Why did we do that? What, you know, what did we fail in our system to not be prepared and ready, especially when you have notice? That's a given. But there's things such as the spare ambulances, the protocols in our case, that have been viewed in a different light and brought forward as a violation and then potentially a sanction of some sort, that hadn't been done in the past and thought we were meeting those expectations. and no way at this point financially to correct those on site under the current regulation. So one extreme to the next in those scenarios.
So my question, do you think that's a problem in the field or a problem in the board office, or both? Anybody?
Without which problem? I guess, Terry. Ultimately, it's just knowing the process. And I'll be honest with you, it feels like the process has maybe changed since the last meeting, or at least we weren't fully aware of it. So...
the inspection process, or the
what? Yeah, is that the? I guess that's my question. Is the feeling that the annual ambulance inspection process is different today than it was a year ago or 2 years ago?
Absolutely.
I'll answer that. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they will come, spend 10-15 minutes in a truck, maybe look at 25-30% of our trucks versus spending an hour in each truck and doing 100%. And then just picking things that have never been, I guess, enforced.
What do you mean by picking things?
And just things that we've never been addressed.
So that previous inspectors have never looked at.
Yeah, exactly. And I've talked to Joe about this, like lettering on the ambulances.
Uh-huh.
Operated this way with a truck for 5 years and it wasn't an issue. And then suddenly this year it was an issue because it didn't say Liberal on it. So those are just little things like the process and what they're looking for and maybe digging deeper definitely has changed this year than what has happened in the past.
Gotcha. So...
My inspections went from typically it's handled in the morning, which thorough is fine, but it was 8 hours for my agencies and then... you know, the request to send stuff suddenly to investigations changed, sheer the sanctioning tool. So there's a lot that's changed and in process, it sounds like it's in flux. So I think that's where the shock value has come out and caused a tremendous amount of angst across the state.
The sanctioning tool for operators has always been there, correct, Joe? I mean, it has been since I've been in investigations.
Graduated sanctions.
About.
No, okay. The sanctioning tool
okay, so
specifically.
So you're talking about the other tool.
Yeah.
Okay. So what would you suggest we use?
Have you formally adopted that as a board?
I don't think so. Have we? I don't think we have. Formally adopted the tool that we used at the last meeting.
Okay. The committee adopted its use.
Okay.
So it's used for the committee's purpose. But
I thought we asked for it. I may be wrong, but okay. Okay.
Thank you, Joe. So, of course, I don't do what some of you do on a day-to-day basis. So just for clarification, Joe, when you're speaking of they, who do you mean? Who are handing down the penalties or the sanctions? Is that attorneys or who is they?
They is the investigations committee of the board. They're the ones that make the determination.
Okay. And then just for clarification, the discussion that I'm listening to now, is it the concern that the inspections are done so differently from before that are causing problems, or is it that once the problem is corrected, it stays on one's record, even though it's been corrected? And so can you clarify or explain the major concern? Thank you.
So I don't think the last question was directed at me, because that's not my feeling. So, guys.
Yeah, I think.
I'm just trying to get an understanding of the discussion that just occurred. I'm hearing two things, that the inspections are totally different from the past, or is the concern that, because I serve on some other state agencies' boards, and so even within DCF, daycare providers, when they're inspected, they might correct that problem right then and there, but they later say that should be removed from their record. So whoever can I just want to know what's the main concern regarding your previous discussion. Or are they all a concern? Thank you.
Thanks, Senator.
Yeah, for Butler County EMS, I mean, the documentation that has happened isn't a concern. I think from the survey information and the other feedback we got outside of the survey was inconsistencies, subjectivity, i.e. interpretation of protocols and how that's applied in the past versus under the current inspection or inspectors, i.e. spare trucks as well, about how that is interpreted in the regulatory process, being one of those key pieces. And then not knowing that the next step was going to change with potentially those things that were corrected on site now being a violation that would go forth to an investigations committee.
Okay, that makes total sense. Thank you so much for that explanation.
So as far, I guess, from my perspective on the investigations, you know, items going to the investigations committee itself, where that information would be, where that line would be drawn as to what comes to investigations versus what doesn't. Is that kind of what you're getting at, Frank? Is that some sort of delineation on when it goes beyond just the board staff office of these violations occurred and it's documented, or is it a situation where action needs to be taken by the investigations committee?
Yeah, I think
is it just a FYI notification process to the investigations committee that, hey, this is what was found?
Yeah, tracking and trending, I think, is very important for accountability.
Sure.
Repeat offenses, which needs to be held in that documentation realm, where it goes from there. I think in the past it's been a statistical reflection for the committee and the board. This is the percentage, this is the category of those things, because when we move past that 50%, and I'm just using that arbitrarily, but of services in the state that have those violations, and 80% is there, further defining that data of where and what are those opportunities to bolster or improve, KMSA would be prepared in those situations to put forth education, understanding, knowledge base, and enhancement for those things. So I think that's where my brain goes.
Sure.
In the past, you guys have heard, wow, we're concerned because these are the number of violations that we're seeing. But to immediately jump to the tool and having that individual accountability for 80% of the state licensed services is, I think, a huge jump and leap there. That's just my opinion.
Joe, just for my education purposes, how many inspectors do you have?
I currently have two inspectors with a third vacancy.
With what?
I have a third inspector position, but it's vacant at the moment.
And brief me just briefly on the education they receive to go out and do inspections.
It's an onboarding process orientation with the two that were there with their supervisor at the time.
And is there a policy, a written policy for them as to what they follow and how they do it, or?
There is an inspection policy that is old that is kind of used as a framework, but.
Well, and that might be a good place for us all to start to maybe solve some of the inconsistencies. And I was thinking all along, is there different levels of violations? I mean, because back when I was sitting out there, you could never prove to me you needed a fire extinguisher on the ambulance. No one could ever prove that to me, not let alone two. The only one we ever used was a car fire that happened three blocks away that the guys happened to go put out. But that's just, I mean, that's, I'm digging. But it would seem to me that there would be some different levels of stuff that identifies seriousness of the inspection process. I mean, I'm just throwing that out on the table for discussion with all you guys that have to live with it every day.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Terry. I think, and some of that, is they've started down that path, I think, with the sanctioning tool to assign points to it is one, but I think then we get into the weeds a little bit on sterile wrapping, things along those lines, and we can discuss that at another point. I don't want to get too far down the weeds. I think really the overall thing is just having some general agreement on what's appropriate. The reality is, well, I mean, you're the previous chief to Reno County. You understand the number of items on a unit and the number of units that we have. There's no way we're getting through an inspection without a violation of some sort.
Right.
And nothing major. We're gonna have something of this sort.
Sure.
Something that's not sealed. I just don't want to progress that it's taking to the point that it's going to an investigations committee next. The way we saw it before, or the last one, is the sanctioning tool applied and a potential fine tied to it when the rest of our stuff is really pretty darn good. I get it for the agencies or entities where there's issues. And if we have issues, yeah, bring us in. Let's talk through that and get the fine and the investigations that needs to occur. It's just figuring that branch where it goes off. It feels like we jumped into a punitive piece really quick with this. And I get that no fines have been applied yet. It's just understanding the process, writing the process out so we're all in agreement with it. Because, I mean, I'm blunt. I'm not being accusatory, but it feels like the process is really in flux, and it doesn't seem to be the same as it was at the previous month.
Well, and you made a good point. If you have two trucks, it's a lot easier to make sure they're perfect than if you have 10 or more. I mean, and I've lived a little bit of that, but, you know, that's a problem.
And Mr. Chair, you know, to Terry's point, that Grant Helfrich would be proud of you about the fire extinguishers one and the debate about that. But, you know, what does a burned out light in the stepwell of an ambulance, how does that affect the clinical or quality care that's going to end at the end of the day, what I hope we're all focused on? And where does that weigh out in that whole process?
I think you just made my point to have categories. Yeah. That some of that stuff, you know, particularly if you can fix it on the spot, but sometimes, given the world in which you live, getting a part could be 2 weeks away that had no impact on patient care, but yet is still listed as a violation on the inspection process. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely, and especially this time in our world and society, is it's feast or famine and a lot of those things. And so there's huge problems above and beyond the stairwell light that you're going to have to wait, you know, for somebody to ship overseas to get a replace. So, yeah, point taken.
And I just want to come back to an original point that Frank made with all of this. It's really the concern moving forward. We've identified a bunch of things in these regs that need to change, and we realize it takes time. So what's the process now when we've said these have got to change, we're going to change them? What's the process so we're not spending time in investigations there? So I understand the regs are in existence now, but let's find the process to help this go smoother.
Yes?
No? Any comment? Thoughts?
No, trying to see how I'll say this. One, the process of it going to investigations is the way it should have been done the entire time. Whether it did that or not, that's the way that has to go. That must go. Otherwise,
our legislator and our 164 friends are probably going to ask us why we're not looking at these things and going through those things and following the established state process for those things. Again, the discretion comes at the board level, and the board could delegate that down if they chose. I'll tell you, being in that seat, that's not a responsibility I want. But if you decide that that's a responsibility I need to have, so be it. Because that's a lot of discretion in a single seat.
And maintaining consistency is going to be hard.
Yeah. So the process is these the entire time. If the board is wanting these things corrected, which I assume, and that's the assumption that's been made the entire time, is that if there's a potential violation, the board would want that corrected. The public would want that corrected.
Sure.
And if that's the case, then it's got to go through the process until those words change. And then when those words change, that's the new side of it. But the board can use their discretion at that point to say, you know, we understand that this is it. We're trying to fix this, and there's going to be no further violation, no further action, whatever they decide.
Violation occurred, no action, no further action taken. We're accepting local action, whatever.
Or this shouldn't be a violation. Where do we tweak the reg to ensure that this isn't a violation moving forward?
Sure.
That's just the process of statutes, rules, and regs.
Mr. Chair, understanding the 130 plus and having that process go through timeline, I can see, at least under the current process, the investigations committee and how long that takes to get to that point. I would just be concerned that a year or two, whatever that would take to get to that point, is something that retrospectively we would be already under the new regulation. I understand you have to follow the process, but it seems like a lot of workload for the investigations committee. And to Dave's point, the other large clinically significant things in the state that focus should be on, is that balance there? And again, I don't know, not being a board member or part of the staff, so that's where I get concerned that 3 years from now, when my spare truck still doesn't have a monitor on it dedicated to it and a ventilator, that I'm going to be in front of the investigations committee justifying that or trying to, and then taking whatever punishment that the investigations committee would recommend at the time.
Well, I can't speak for everybody, but I think I can speak at least for the current makeup of the investigations committee, that if you have a spare ambulance that is not a frontline staffed ambulance running calls and a violation's found that because you didn't have a cardiac monitor on there, there's going to be no action taken on that from the investigations committee, because that is just not, again,
it's not feasible. It's not
sure,
it's
sure.
Feasible. It's not,
right,
know.
Right.
Which is the reason for changing the regulations. We can't speed up the process and what it takes to get the regulations changed. That is all handled.
Can I ask a question on that?
Sure.
So is it even possible for the investigations committee or the board as a whole to establish in the minutes or something to say something to that effect that is there documented? Because, and I get where everybody's coming. I mean, I personally like the idea of the checklist because it's much more objective and show me in black and white what I need to do, rather than somebody coming out and say, well, I don't really care what Terry thinks I should have on my ambulance. Show me in the reg where it says that's what I have to have.
Sure.
Or that I'm doing it wrong, right?
Right.
But I think, and that's, even as a service director myself, that I see Frank's point of,
So two years from now,
the investigation could
well.
Be entirely different.
I don't know if you have, attached into my brain or something, but that is exactly what I thought. Because, you know, right now we know that the investigations committee, because we have your word and we're sure. Reasonable people, but we do not know what future investigations committees will do. So if we can put some sort of language that just sets that, then I think I would feel better about that too.
I mean, if it falls within those certain parameters that we're talking about, you know, the stuff on a spare ambulance, or quote-unquote spare ambulance, assuming that language comes to fruition, like, I think that would that, Frank, am I wrong with that?
I guess, though, that but once the language is approved in the regulation, then it's no longer an issue.
Right. But for the next year.
For the next year, I think that occurs now with the investigations committee, is that no further that a violation occurred, no further action taken. Can we write every single thing down of what potentially would be found that way? Probably not.
No, and I don't think that's what I'm just wondering, sure. Like an overarching, like if these findings come forward, you don't have a cardiac, like you don't have what you would consider a spare ambulance stocked like you do a first line sure. ambulance, like penalties are not going to be imposed.
I can tell you right now that potential has the impact on us, because in our list of equipment, mechanical CPR devices listed in there, but those are only carried on our staffed frontline ambulances. We don't have those on reserve, second out truck, whatever you want to call it, a spare ambulance. That potential is there, that it will be documented that we don't have a mechanical CPR device on that unit, and that's something that we're just going to have to deal with.
Take the vote, yeah.
It will, you know, as far until the regulations are changed to allow that to occur. Or not occur. I that is where the I guess it's kind of, we're in kind of a pickle, because the regulation states this. The only thing we can do from the board perspective is say that a violation occurred and no further action is being taken. Is that correct, Joe?
I also want to. So I'm going to, Mr. Chair, if you're
sure.
So I sometimes feel compelled to sit on my hands, and other times I don't. I think that one of the duties of your board is variances. You've done this exact thing already. That's with single providers issued your own. Now, so I understand that you can't issue wholesale variance to this. We can get that done through legislation, but whether agencies have to go through and apply for it, I don't know. I think there, as a board, you guys make the decision on that, on how to proceed with it. You know, I think the issue that came at hand is we're in favor of accountability. I'm in favor of accountability. The manner in which things have been propagated out has set everybody on nerve, and without defined processes, I think that has to change. But anyway,
so that's probably, I don't, is that a Sam question on the variance, allowing for variances to be some sort of variance process in writing to be allowed for this, for the interim?
The board can grant a variance for any identified rule or regulation where there's a hardship that exists. That's the language there. That has to go to an applicant, previous counsel, and we could ask our general counsel now, but previous counsel has said that cannot be a blanket thing to apply to all. It has to be, you have to look at the hardship that's present for that component. But like you've done with lettering on an ambulance,
sure.
Once established.
That authority was granted to you that.
Correct. And these parameters were met, that variance could be from that identified regulation. Now, the thing is, it's still not in compliance with the regulation.
Sure.
So.
And even those variances, you still notify the board mm-hmm. of those variances that were approved, which would still occur, even if we figure out a way to do the variance process with some of these things. I personally don't have a problem with variance. If we go that route, maybe that's probably not a bad idea for a piece of equipment that is not necessarily carried on or stocked or kept in service on a second out or a reserve type or spare ambulance. What is not eligible for the variance process would be anything with expiration dates or expired medications, whatever else that may be, which there were a ton of findings of that, of expired items on in-service frontline staffed ambulances throughout the state, which that's the part that I struggle with is the reasons behind that and the why. Okay, Senator.
Thank you. So, just curious, what is the process of the penalties? What are the penalties imposed on the findings? Is there a first, second, third chance? Is there a monetary penalty? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Senator. So those vary. They can range anywhere from accepting from one, no violation being found, to if there is a violation found, they can accept local action. The board is given the ability to issue or levy civil fines per violation with the maximum amount that's listed in statute. We have established graduated sanctions and a fine schedule for those, specifically those things that are those first, second, third violations that do ramp up as that goes through, or based upon volume of potential violations. And then the next tools in the toolbox are limitation, modification of the license, suspension of the license, and then revocation of the license. Those are all the tools okay. That are in their box.
Mr. Chairman, Joe, then is the proposal that you're discussing now to allow for a waiver of some sorts, depending on the situation, to excuse a penalty?
Correct. It would be that they could have a temporary variance from that identified rule regulation given a hardship. And temporary is not necessarily defined.
Okay, thank you.
So the variance process, which obviously is going to be a full board discussion to allow for that, correct? I mean, that would be something that would have to be discussed and authored or approved by the full board to grant you that authority for the variance process.
Yeah, so it doesn't necessarily reduce the workload at all. It just shifts the burden from one committee to another.
Right.
And then if that committee opts to delegate that authority, then it shifts to our seat.
So. I guess it would depend on how many, Dave, what items would you see under the variance process being allowed?
I would say pretty much everything that we've outlined in these reg changes would be a good starting point for it. And then followed up with a clear defined process on how investigations are in. If they don't, I mean, I've got a policy for everything that occurs pretty much in my organization. So here's the policy, the procedure, how it'll be conducted, and definitions would be tremendously beneficial.
Okay.
Which is being worked on.
Sure. Probably better further discussion, I guess, with the full board present as well, just to see what everyone's thoughts are on that specific topic. The probably one of the only other things I have regarding inspections is it I have been contacted by a few different folks that feel like there's some inconsistencies between not only at the service, inconsistency with from one truck to the other or one station to the other, but inconsistencies between services, from one service to another service on a few things. So I have nothing to validate that on other than hearsay and what we've been told, but that's, I guess that's probably, I don't know what else to say other than having a few different folks contact me with those concerns. That
if those make it to me, I can
sure
affect a potential change or and analyze it. But if they don't make it to me, I can't really fix what I don't know about.
Correct. So I think that's probably the concern, is that those things are being shared amongst, whether they're shared amongst service directors or others, but not necessarily shared with you or your staff of those things that are occurring. Not that that ever happens internally at your agency. I'm sure that you don't have people that find solutions to things amongst themselves, but it never gets to your office of what that solution is.
Well, Mr. Chair, it may be vague enough that we as individual service directors know what happened at our, and the rest is hearsay when
sure
there's conversations going on. So in reverse of that is knowing that there may be inconsistency is looking into that at the point that it's known. So, and some of the survey results, which we'll get forward, also reinforce that.
Okay.
Feedback. And I would just say at our inspection that happened, we had two inspectors for 6.5 hours, and that occurred amongst them as well, as far as conversations and whether it was or was not a violation. So,
okay.
How long have we had the two inspectors we have now?
One's been there just over a year.
Okay.
I think at 13 months, and the other one, I believe, is coming up on this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just curious. I mean, still, I didn't walk on my job day one and know everything I probably should have known. So I think there's a learning curve there, but not making excuses for anyone. I think they want to do a good job, and so.
There's no doubt they want to do a good job.
Right. I mean, I saw that in my department. Was my inspection lengthy? Yes, it was. Probably the longest inspection I've ever had. But they were thorough, which I appreciated. So,
the folks I've chatted with in the metro area, nobody has complaints about the human beings that are going out there to inspect. It relates back to questions of process and preparation. So, nobody's said, "Damn it, we got to get rid of Frank." You know, I didn't hear
about the human beings. So,
well, then let's get rid of Frank.
Say that I want to give people the benefit of the doubt because I make a lot of mistakes, as we all do. So, anyway.
Did you have violations?
No, sir. Really? Not this year, but I did last year. Oh, not last year, but the year before. I haven't been inspected yet this year. But I did the year before. More than I wanted the year before. So. But I had to ask, sorry. No, I don't mind. I mean, I did not have any last year. I haven't been inspected this year, but the year before when I was inspected, I did. And everybody who knows me knows that that upsets me greatly, so I hear where everybody's coming from because I did not handle it well, and I had violations before, but nothing like I had year before last. So I was extremely upset. And so I understand how people are feeling, but
And so last year I was surprised at the length of time it took because I was not used to that. So I understand.
Again, for my educational purposes, for me, do we still give an advance notice of when they're coming out?
Yes, I had a week's notice, and I've always had advance notice.
Yeah, that's pretty important, but I'm the guy that got that done before a lot of you were in EMS. And the reason is because I made a pharmacy inspector wait 7 hours before I'd even talk to him, because I don't show up in Topeka in demand to meet with somebody right away. But the good thing about that, and the argument all along, was what's the object of the inspection? Is it try to find a mistake, or is it try to make sure that we're all meeting? And I would tell you with my people, with the 48, is it 48 hours or longer you get a notice?
Yeah, sometimes I think it's a week, sometimes it's 48
Back in the day, it was 48 hours, and I would tell you my people jumped through hoops for 48 hours to make sure that everything on the list was checked and good. So that's to your benefit, I mean, by giving advance notice. And the only argument to that is like in Dave's situation, if you're running 30 calls a day, sometimes you don't have time to look at some of that stuff. I mean, it's in a 24-hour shift or a 12-hour shift, those units could be on the street the entire time for 48 hours or 3 days or 5 days or whatever notice you have. So there's needs to be a little bit of flexibility there as well, where if they came in and said, we may have a violation because that truck's been on the road for the last 3 days and hadn't been in the station. So anyway, my comment. Thank you for the education.
Yeah, as always, I think the inspections are simply a snapshot in time of what's occurring. You know, I do typically give a warning to crews, but we try to let it come up so we're keeping the standard up every day. But the reality of an operation, and every service director here knows this, is that I've got stuff I wouldn't pass inspection on today because I've got lights out, they're on order, I'm waiting to get into the mechanic, things like that. And so a snapshot in time for a violation on that is rough to handle. If I've got the ACR in motion, our auto condition report in motion to have stuff repaired, I'm not going to take an ambulance out of service because I've got one flasher out. So there are things like that to find the balance on.
Well, and I think in all the conversation, you just all made the very point why there ought to be categories of violation. I mean, whether it's 2, 3, 4, 5, or whatever the number is, some of that stuff makes no difference. I mean, it makes a difference currently by the way it's listed in the regulation, but the step light is a good example, or a tail light. I mean, you want to pull that truck out of a...
I will tell you about the step light. I fell out of the side of an ambulance and blew my knee and was out of work for 3 or 4 months because I had to have 2 surgeries. And it was dark. We were on a dark street, and I stumbled right out the door. So part of that is because I'm old.
Well, and maybe because of that.
I wasn't paying attention.
And maybe because of that, Jerry, they've put in 2 step lights now.
Yeah, well, that could be.
And one could be burnt out, and you're still in violation.
But, you know, the answer to that is, I mean, I just spec an ambulance. Spec it with no step light. Then you don't have to worry about replacing the light.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry, I'll joke on that one a little bit, but that's as silly as this when we've had inspectors. We've got 3 flashlights or 3 lights, and their spotlight's not working, so they're telling them to cut the wire on the spotlight and remove it, then they're not in violation because that spotlight's not working currently. They're going to have it repaired.
Gotcha. So I'm a big proponent of the step lights.
Well, and Dave, I liked your comment. It's a very small picture of time that everything's fine and tomorrow it can totally fall apart, which then, and you could even use the worst case scenario on a valuable piece of equipment that you're required to have that works today, and tomorrow it doesn't work and you run a call and you have some untoward patient outcome because of that, and then it comes to investigation. I mean, so, you know, sometimes I think we don't process common sense probably as much as we should, but that's just me.
Dave, your snapshot in time comment is true. However, I will say that there are agencies that is a true snapshot in time, whether it's today or next week, because their folks are not notified. I'll use my organization as one. One or two people are the only people that even know that the inspector's coming. None of the staff, none of the crew, none of the supervisors even know they're coming until they show up that morning. That is not information that's shared or disseminated with anybody except a couple of chief officers when the notification's made. So they truly are doing a snapshot in time on a daily basis. There's no prep. There's no double-checking of anything, running through a checklist to make sure when the inspector gets there that everything's okay. Because the expectation from us is that it is in service, ready to go every single day. So, and I know not everybody's that way. Some, you know, there's agencies out there that have their crews go through stuff. They know when it's coming, and they start prepping that day to make sure everything's the way, you know, that they will do as well as they can to pass the inspection and not find any violations at all. But not everybody operates that way either. So, what other, you know, the variance thing, I think we can come back to that with the full board, see how that, what that looks like, just for discussion at least. The regulatory process, all the recommendations on the regulations as that moves forward, you know, I don't know what else to do at this point on some of those other than what has already been stated on identifying that a violation was found and no action was taken potentially, and or making that, you know, having that as a recommendation when those come through. But until these are adopted, there's not a whole lot that can be done differently. And it's very similar process that we know they're going to raise the speed limit on I-70, supposedly, hypothetically. But that's not going to take place till for 6 months. So they're going to raise it to 80, and I get a ticket for doing 85, and it's, well, I was only five over because I know they're changing the speed limit in 6 months. I'm guessing that I'm not going to get much sympathy from the trooper that pulled me over to write that ticket for doing 80 when I shouldn't have been, when it was technically speeding. So seatbelt violation. If you get pulled over and get a ticket for not wearing your seatbelt, you're still getting the ticket, even though you put your seatbelt on after the stop was conducted. So maybe it's the wrong analogy to use with some of these regulations, but that is kind of where it's at right now. Unfortunately, the regulations are what they are and say what they say. And now that we're moving forward with the process to try to change that, that's the goal, to alleviate some of these things. But regulatory, the way the process is, I don't know that other than variances and figuring out a way to work through some of those things until that this occurs is probably going to be the answer.
And I think everybody in this room, everybody that's on the computer, all of us want to be accountable, right? We sure want to be held accountable. And I think it'll be very interesting this year to see what the inspection results produce now that we know what the inspectors are now checking, what they're looking for, what their interpretations of the regulations and those kind of things are moving forward. So I think this year may be a good, to comparatively speak, last year it looks like there's these huge violations because of all the things we've never been inspected for. So it'll be interesting to see what this year looks like moving forward to now that we know single-use co-band is you know, someone's interpretation, or you can't open your rigid suction catheter on your onboard truck that we've done for years, right? Now we know that's not okay. So it'll be interesting to see if those numbers trend down significantly as they start their inspections this year.
And it's okay if you're willing to take the violation that you opened your suction catheter.
Right.
Right. On that note, that component does come up with items that are
opened, because we are citing that as a deficiency, because it's not as a manufacturer packaged it and such, and the fact that anything that's open in the back of the ambulance is probably contaminated from the moment it's opened. So should be opened with the patient that is also contaminated with whatever they have at that point. Is that the thoughts and feelings of this committee? Is it, are we okay with that being open for multiple patients?
I feel like if it says sterile, it should stay closed, because we transport a lot of patients with airborne illnesses, and that the package is open. What are we giving the person we're using it on that doesn't have an airborne illness? I mean, that's just my opinion. If it says sterile, it should say, it's not a sterile procedure, I understand that. Right. But if the package says sterile, it should be sealed. That's just my opinion.
I'll tell you, I mean, I'm happy to walk down the streets of Topeka and ask folks the same question and just see if the public, what they feel like. But maybe not Topeka. I'm making some things, but I'm curious to hear what the thoughts are, because I don't know. When I go to the grocery store, I don't necessarily pick up something that's opened. I probably won't pick up anything that's past its expiration date and decide that that's what I'm going to use, or that's, and it might be fine past it, and it may be fine opened. But
it's like the Coban.
Just a thought.
And it doesn't say sterile on the package. It doesn't say one-time patient use. So I get that part, but I did find some that's not packaged from the hospital uses it.
Well, I would offer up, Mr. Chairman, that, you know, sterility on those packaging, probably the biggest market is in the hospital. And so at least in my training as a nurse, you know, the sterility was for a sterile field.
Sure.
And the package is identified as sterile so that it can be put into that. Now, that's different in whatever, you know, a suction that's pulling things away from the patient versus injecting things into the patient, a different scenario. So I think there's a lot of variance there on what sterility is.
So I think it varies tremendously. I mean, it's great. You've unwrapped the sterile package for the suction, and you've just pulled a laryngoscope out of your box that is not in a sterile package that you're shoving clear down their airway. I think there's variance on it. I think that the big deal is define it for us. If this is what we're going to be scored against, for years we have not been fined on that, or violated on that. We all practice as EMTs in the classroom that we've got a suction stuck in, catheter stuck in the side of the portable suction, and out you go.
Yeah.
So if that's going to be the standard, let's define it. I think that this is the biggest issue, is communication and stuff and just understanding.
And budgeting, I mean, you know, not that that's a huge amount, but already in our system since our inspection, that's changed our process completely in pulling expired medications off 30 days in advance so that we don't go over that timeline limit. Packaging, the number of times that our logistics person is replacing anything that has even a rub off where everybody can't read what that's labeled, even though we know that the box of epinephrine looks like the epinephrine. So going into budgetary times, I'm going to have to squeak just a little bit more margin to make sure that we're covering all of those medications and things that would be pulled off. And we're not allowing any marginal question about that right now because of the process. So,
okay.
I liked your comparison, Dave, with a laryngoscope. Which, you know, you ought to use that as an example, too, if you want to go out and ask the public. Oh, you can't breathe. I'm going to put a tube in your lungs, and I'm going to use a device that's come out of a box that I have no idea how. It's clean, but it's not sterile.
Yeah.
I mean, the question is it clean?
Sorry.
I would sure hope that it had been disinfected or cleaned, but...
Well, and we need to look at the data, and I haven't, we've talked about it. You know, there's only four drugs that truly expire, and the FDA and the Department of Defense have done deep research on that, And just recently, the governor signed House Bill 2250 that says you can use Narcan for 10 years past the expiration. So there's a lot of data out there nationally. When the Army did it with the Department of Defense and the FDA, 90% of over 100 medications lasted more than 10 years. There's never been a person die in the United States from an expired med, ever. But we kill 50,000 a day for giving the wrong med. So, I mean, we need to have, and I'm not saying you need to change everything to make it as bad as it seems, but again, we have to be careful because, particularly with this Narcan thing, you know, if you pop somebody heavy and you find them or you suspended their ambulance license, it would be an interesting argument in court.
That law actually does specifically state healthcare is cannot administer it if it's expired. So,
which in itself is silly,
right? Well, it's designed for bystanders and not penalizing a bystander for
I get that, but
criminalizing
again,
him, which is what happened.
It's the drug.
I wholeheartedly agree, but yeah, the law is healthcare providers cannot.
Well, and my other argument on that is sterile 4x4s. Who's putting the expiration on it? The company that sells the product. And if I'm bleeding to death and you want to use something that's not sterile to stop the bleeding, please, any of you, do that. Please. I mean, give me an antibiotic later in the ER. So, anyway.
Terry, it will depend on whether it's on back order or not. So.
Well, and with me, it depends on who sees me. So, I get that. And Jason left, so I can't expect a comment from him. So.
We got a couple minutes. We can go around the room real quick. If you got region or association updates, nothing. Dave,
I'll throw an update.
Throw out the update. I pushed this out the other day. The treatment in place billing code has been pushed out for Medicaid. The ambulance response and treatment no transport code of A0998. Will go into effect July 1. It's a rate for $250. Speaking on behalf of KMSA a little bit, but we're putting together some frequently asked questions. Our billing society is going to get things out for agencies that are interested in doing that. And as we know, that's already possible with some private pay, I think Blue Cross and some others, but might be a way to augment some of your reimbursements. So.
Yes, sir.
And Dave, question I meant to ask Monday on that, it got posed to me afterwards as well. And so if someone were to use that billing code, that with it being Medicaid, your conditions of participation would mean that you do have to bill every patient.
Yeah,
right?
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Billing ethics applies to all of that. So okay. It's all or nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the answer I provided. I just want to make sure.
And the great thing is that a lot of services have already established a fee schedule for that, even though it wasn't reimbursed, and do that on a regular basis. It's just now this is guaranteed reimbursement. So, yeah. And those that haven't done it have an avenue now. So,
the goal is hopefully CMS level at the Medicare. Eventually we'll get there on it too. I know we've lobbied at the federal level. Perhaps we'll get there.
Southwest Kansas is no longer dry. You've got rain now.
So we're all excited.
That's good.
We tried to burn the
whole thing. I know.
I know.
Well, I had two crews out there for a long time.
Okay.
We did.
Anything else on the KMSA? Yeah,
we do have a leadership program that's being offered up by Mr. John Friesen on the 11th. There's still seats available. I believe that's happening in Hutchinson, Kansas. For our 2026 KMSA conference, we have registration open. Pre-con's been posted and the conference details there. There will be a mobile integrated health community paramedic element to that pre-conference, so look for that. And KMSA has been working hard on that particular topic of MIH and CP. and supporting the organizations that are working hard to get their grant money and get things stood up. So good, bright future there for MIH and CP in Kansas.
All right, very good. Any other comments? Anyone online have comments? Okay. All right, if nothing else before the committee, we're adjourned. Thank you, guys.